Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Knowing that ultimately it's God who does the healing, Dr. Medici acts as the maestro, orchestrating a person's health through right timing and right therapies, using traditional, natural, alternative, and spiritual practices. Dr. Medici says it's time for people to wake up to their innate potential to heal and to be given a doctor who can orchestrate that healing. Dr. Medici is currently working toward his PhD in biochemistry at Long Beach University, with additional study in acupuncture, kinesiology, and quantum medicine. He's the curriculum director of the Santa Monica Shiatsu School and the clinic director at the Premier Center in Santa Monica, where he treats many famous names in Hollywood under nationally recognized Premier Labs owner and CEO Dr. Robert Marshall. Got a health question? Ask Dr. Medici live today on Straight Talk on Health. And now, here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning. I am Dr. Vincent Medici, and let's get to that other level of understanding, the one that asks you to go to a place where you learn that your illness, what you're concerned about getting on the other side of, is not necessarily just herbal. It's lifestyle changes that you integrate with concepts like your structure, your emotions, remediating those scars in your body. And that blend of those four variables, your nutritional chemistry, your psycho-emotional state, your structural state, and then last but not least, those scars that you have to remediate, that blend turns on your electrical field, and that organizes your chemistry to cure. That is the medicine of the future. In that right now, whether we're talking about pharmaceutical drugs or herbs, the tendency is to understand your illness as simply an array of chemicals that have to be altered for your betterment. And that's just not as deep as understanding that those chemicals, once they're combined, whether it's herbally or pharmaceutically, create an electrical field. And the measurement and the power in that electrical field is really the highest intelligence in the body. So we're going to apply this understanding today to the 10 top surgeries to avoid. I'm going to list the 10 most unnecessary and possibly detrimental surgeries that you can and that the American public gets each year, and I'm going to teach you an alternative based upon those four variables. How you're going to look at nutritional shifts, psycho-emotional shifts, shifts in your structure, and remediating those scars. Those four combinations are how you'll avoid the top 10 surgeries. First surgery, hyperthyroidism or Graves' disease. So, again, the thyroid gland is a little puffy cotton candy sort of a gland right at the base of the neck, and its central function is to control your metabolism. So when we say someone's got a low metabolism, it means all the millions of chemical reactions in the cell don't go fast enough. And we understand this as low thyroid, which is generally treated with a synthetic thyroxin or what we call levothyroxine or Synthroid. That's the low thyroid. Lots of people get this. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about what they call Graves' disease or hyperthyroidism. This is scary when you get this. When you get the low thyroid, you don't feel energetic. You get constipated. Your skin gets dry. It's not pleasant, but it's livable. But the hyperthyroid, which is what we're discussing, or Graves' disease, is when that thyroid gland starts to secrete too much thyroxine, so it goes high. When it goes high, the symptoms are scary. The scariest symptom amidst insomnia, insatiable appetites, joint pain, restlessness, the scariest symptom when the thyroid goes high, when you get Graves' disease, is the heart palpitations. You feel like your heart is about to jump out of your rib cage. You feel like your heart's going to burst. And that's what sends you into the emergency room. That's what sends you to your endocrinologist. And then they measure the levels of thyroxine, and they tell you, well, we're going to try a 6-week to 12-week course of a drug called tapazole, or its derivative. And that drug, hopefully, will slow down the thyroid. They'll also give you a beta blocker, usually a Tylenol, and that'll slow down the heart. So they mitigate the symptoms, as they should, and then we see. And what happens after 6 to 12 weeks is if that gland is still hyperactive, then they talk to you about radiating the gland or even cutting the gland out. They both amount to the same thing. So after a 6 to 12 week course with Graves' disease, with hyperthyroidism, they're going to tell you, well, we're just going to take out the gland then, or we're going to radiate it. Now, a lot of people don't understand that when we give you radioactive iodine, we kill the gland. Sometimes people don't equate the death of the gland with radioactive iodine because they know that the thyroid needs iodine. Well, you got to catch that little shift there. When you give somebody a iodine atom, but that's radioactive, that has the capacity to bind into the thyroid. And the reason that they give you radioactive iodine is because they know that the thyroid needs iodine. So you're going to get lots of that radioactive hit to the gland. A radioactive molecule, okay, a radioactive atom, a radioactive isotope will destroy tissue. So they're really giving you a surgery through radiation. And this is what we do today. And then we tell our patient that we can simply regulate the amount of Synthroid that they get artificially, that through pharmaceutical medicine, we can just go to the doctor, get a prescription, you see an endocrinologist every so many months, and we can figure out the dose you need. Well, you see, the problem with this is that that's only partly true. The problem with this is that the relationship between your thyroid gland and your hypothalamus and your pituitary, your brain, that the brain is talking to the thyroid consistently. And the brain is measuring the amount of available thyroxine. And this is done in picogram levels. This is done in billionths, trillionths of a gram. This is done so precisely that it is really a terrible assumption that if we take the gland out, we're going to be able to regulate the amount of Synthroid or thyroxine your body needs by a blood test every 6 months. Think about that. We have this divinely precise mechanism between the hypothalamus, the pituitary, and your glandular system. This feedback loop, it basically says if the amount of thyroxine that controls your metabolism is too high, the pituitary and hypothalamus in your brain will find out about it and send a message down to the thyroid gland to slow down production. And we're going to replace that with a blood test every 6 months. Well, you guessed it. It doesn't work. And each year, thousands of these glands are cut out in the name of, if you don't get this out, you're going to go into thyroid storm, and something's going to happen to your heart that's going to be absolutely irreversible and tragic. The truth of the matter is, number one, when the gland comes out, after they radiate it, and you're on Synthroid, it's not that you're going to be sick after that in the sense of, you're going to feel ill. You're going to feel better, but you see the long-term effect of not having the thyroxine regulated with the precision that was put there originally, that is very costly. And if you see people who have had these thyroidectomies or these radiated thyroids, over a decade or two, their life has changed. Generally, they age much faster. They dry out much faster. The wrinkles come much sooner. We also know statistically they have a much higher incidence of stroke once this gland comes out. All sorts of funny things happen to them that aren't going to be related to the thyroidectomy. But nonetheless, if you watch people and how they age and how they progress after the surgery, you're going to see that they're never the same. And lots of them will tell you, after that, I wasn't the same. So let's understand something. If you've got a thyroid cancer, that's a different story. A thyroid cancer, once it's diagnosed, is nothing to take lightly. And if unfortunately there's no option but to do that type of a surgery, to cut out or kill a gland because you want to prevent the metastasis, that's one thing. But Graves' disease, hyperthyroidism can cure. And it's not the nature of this show to go into the cures that I've seen, but simply to tell you that most fundamentally, hyperthyroidism is a problem and here's where the education now is so important, is an autonomic disease. So I'm going to lay down a word that should have, especially if you've listened to this show before, especially if you've been to the archives, this should have a lot of meaning. An autonomic disease, it means that the sympathetic nervous system has run amok. It means that your lifestyle is such that you've been speeding up. And when you speed up, because your brain says, work faster, work harder, work longer, sleep less, eat worse, do more, worry more, get angry more, when you're a city slicker, when you live the life of your average city slicker, your brain tells the thyroid gland to speed up through a set of nerves called the sympathetic nerves. The sympathetic nerves are the electrical signals to the organ systems which ask the organs to speed up. And you don't think about this. They function independently of your consciousness. The autonomic nervous system is not in your conscious control. For instance, you don't think about having to tell your heart to speed up when you need to run faster, nor do you think about telling your heart to slow down when you're at rest. But if those signals, the upspeed signal and the downspeed signal, the sympathetic dominant impulse and its counterpart, the parasympathetic impulse, if they don't work in balance, if they get their signals crossed, you don't work correctly. I have never seen a case of hyperthyroidism, of Graves' disease, of people coming in with their hearts pounding. I have never seen a case of it, and I've seen dozens of cases of it over the years. I have seen people cure it without surgery. I have seen people go to surgery. I have seen just about all there is to see with high hyperthyroidism. But I have never seen a single case of it where a person wasn't sympathetic dominant. I have never seen a case of it where a person wasn't under stress, and then the real stress came. I have never seen a case in 2 decades of Graves' disease, of hyperthyroidism, where somebody from the time they were little hasn't led a stressful life. And it's been stress upon stress upon stress. And by the time you hit your 4th decade, you can no longer deal with that stress. And then something really stressful happens. You lose your job. You lose a relationship. You lose a parent, a friend, a brother, a sister, and it just takes you over the top. And you wake up one morning at 2 a.m. or 3 a.m. and your heart is pounding and it's going to jump out of your body. Now, you can talk about an herbal cure. You can talk about a pharmaceutical cure. But I don't see this happen. Tapazole works sometimes. Most of the time, after Tapazole fails, they tell you to radiate. And as far as herbs are concerned, well, there are herbs out there, and there are theories, and there are notions from there's too much metal in the thyroid, to you should try bugleweed, so on and so forth. And I can say to you, good luck. I hope it works for you. But when it doesn't, understand what I have always seen to be the case. And that is a person has to understand how to relax, how to kick the parasympathetic nerves back in. And you're listening and you're saying, thank you for telling me something I already know. Who doesn't understand that they need to relax in a stress-oriented illness? We could say that that's common to everything. Except here's the point, and here's the point of the show. The fallacy of nutritional medicine, the fallacy of many medicines, is that we use words that we think we understand and we don't. You see, when I say relax, I mean kick your body back into parasympathetic levels, to the place where relaxation hits a threshold where it starts to change the physiology of your body. That's a different story. That's a relaxation that most people don't really understand. And this is where the education comes in. This is what I implore you, the listener, to understand. that if you really look at the statistics of the number of people that cure or fix Graves' disease herbally, they're exceedingly low. It's not something that lends itself to nutritional medicine that easily. It's something that lends itself to a more comprehensive perception of how to heal your body. If you're ready for that, you listen to the next 50 minutes of this show. If you're ready to understand that there's something deeper for you, that lots of things will work with herbs, but lots of complex syndromes need to have a different understanding. When you look at 90% of what hits the hospital every day, of what hits a medical doctor's office every day, these are serious things. These are not simple things. This is not a one-stop shop herbal sort of a remedy. So you've got to open yourself to that deeper level. So we're going to get back to how to get yourself out of sympathetic dominance later on. But right now I want to mention there is another problem with the thyroid that people get diagnosed every year and get it needlessly cut out. So top 10 surgeries to avoid, number one, thyroid surgery. You're never the same after that. And hyperthyroidism, high thyroid, Graves' disease, we call it, not a good deal for a surgery, not a good candidate. Second one, nodules in the thyroid. You get these diagnosed on scans all the time, CT scans. You may have a little lump in the neck. You may feel something in the neck. The neck may be swollen a little bit. The minute you see that or feel it, it may press into your vocal cords. You may feel it as like a lump in the throat. So you're going to go get it scanned. When they scan it, they're going to tell you they have a nodule. I have seen dozens of people be told, get the thyroidectomy, get the thyroid out, get it nuked for simply the nodule. And the risk is cancer. And the truth is 96, 97%, at least 95% of nodules are benign, and they are never going to go to cancer. Never. And we know that. And we can tell that with a fine needle biopsy. And if we can't tell it with a fine needle biopsy, if your physician does not say, well, we're not going to take out your gland, as if this is just some sort of a light, easy thing to do, of course, that's what you're told sometimes. You're told, listen, you've got a nodule. We don't know when this is going to go to cancer. Let's just be safe and take out the gland, and then we'll medicate you with Synthroid. And it's the same thing. It is not the same thing. Do not drink the Kool-Aid, not on this thyroid issue. What you're going to do is ask for a fine needle biopsy. Hopefully your physician will suggest that. And once you get the fine needle biopsy, they're going to tell you whether you have a malignancy or if it's benign. Over 95% of the time, you have nothing to be concerned with. Then sometimes they can't tell. And when they can't tell, they may say, again, let's just make sure. Let's be careful. Let's take the gland out because, of course, we can medicate. Don't go for that one either. What you're going to do if they can't tell is you're going to get another fine needle biopsy from a different lab. You're going to go pay for one independently. That's right. But my insurance doesn't cover it. Go find the money. Your life depends on it. Go to an independent pathologist. Go to an independent medical doctor and have his lab take a look. Get the second opinion or watch it. Or tell your medical doctor, what's the rush? Let's just watch it. And we see if that thing grows. We take a biopsy in 6 months. That's prudence. Save that gland at all costs. And even with cancer, if you ever have to get that gland cut out part of the gland. Now, this is something they'll do in Europe. This is something that's eluded the United States. Too often, if there's some lobe, the upper or lower lobe of the left or right side of the gland, because the gland's kind of got a butterfly shape. It looks like a bow tie. It's a bow tie right at the base of the neck at the sternal notch. And lots of times people will have one small part of it that's got the nodule, or one small part of it that's cancerous, and for that, they take the entire gland. They take the other 90% of the volume of the gland when they could have cut out half of it and easily had the other half of the gland compensate and definitely been assured that that other half of the gland was not cancerous. Certainly it wouldn't have a nodule. And this is what common sense would dictate, but you're not going to be told this, and now you know. So the cure for this is your body shifting back into parasympathetic mode. Now, what relationship does this have to nutrition? Well, here's how you have to understand nutrition. It's not what herb do I take, like bugleweed, to bring down the production of thyroxine to reduce the illness. It's not that. It's how do you use herbal medicine to bring the general health of your body to a level that will facilitate a shift into parasympathetic mode. That's why I put these shows on the archive. You do have to listen to this show again and again, because this is conceptual. And what I'm asking you, the listener, to understand is that if you want cure, if you want to see the miracle of cure in your body, you have to get to the other level. Take that leap. It will come back to you so many times. So again, how would you spend your money nutritionally if you had Graves' disease or if you had hyperthyroidism? What you do is use everything you know about your health profile to make that health profile, through the use of herbs, etc., a healthier you, which is the first way your body shifts into a more relaxed zone. That's the correct use of nutritional medicine for hyperthyroidism. But you could see how we could grow out of this in so many ways. That before you're going to get cure, you have to make lifestyle changes that would shift you into a more relaxed zone. And check the website for those suggestions. How you bring yourself out of the stress state. Next on the list, the cholecystectomy. Probably of the 10 I'm going to list today. And what 10 are we going to list today? Cutting out the thyroid, cutting out the gallbladder, having the knee replaced, hysterectomies and uterectomies, facelifts, I'm sorry, I've got to go after that today, hair replacements, surgeries where you're left with titanium in your body, resections of the small or large intestine for Crohn's disease or ulcerative colitis, breast augmentation and bypass surgeries. Those are the 10. Here's number 2, cutting out the gallbladder. Big boo-boo. Big boo-boo. The liver, upper right-hand quadrant of your body, has 1,200 functions. One of them is to make bile. It makes a green fluid. And that green fluid moves through your liver, through all these passageways, into the gallbladder, and then the gallbladder squirts the bile into the intestine. Purpose of the bile is many, but one is to digest fats. Now, you already know that. But what you may not know is that the liver has many other functions, and one of its other major functions, not just to make bile, not just to make cholesterol, not just to methylate the B vitamins, not just to do so many things. One of the other functions is that it pulls out from your blood poisons, carcinogens, things that go anywhere they want in your body, concentrate in the cell, and finally cause you mayhem, cause you disease. And what the liver does is it filters out these poisons from the blood, dumps them into the bile ducts, the bile passageways way up in the liver, stores this toxic bile now, not just an emulsifier, not just a fluid, yellow-green fluid that causes fat digestion, but also a yellow-green fluid that's got poison in it. But the liver figures, hey, let's dump the poison in the bile ducts because that's going to go out the body anyway through the intestines. Smart body. High central intelligence. What happens when those gallbladder passageways, those bile ducts in your liver, start to get clogged? When they get clogged, the buildup of poison in the blood has nowhere to go. So instead of going through the liver and out the gallbladder and into the intestines, the blood has to clear itself by passing this poison into your organ systems, into your cells. If you could just understand that, that's divine. That basically the brain will shunt or move the poison in the blood into the cells, into the fat of the body, into the fat of the bone marrow, into the fat of the brain, into anywhere it can bind the poison if it can't get it out through the liver, into the gallbladder, and out through the bowels. Now, once your biliary system is clogged up, you may get stones, you may get sludge. And when they tell you that since you can't digest fats and you're vomiting, or you have bad pain into your shoulder blade, or into your neck, or into your chest, or down your arm, and you feel like you're having a heart attack, if your face is yellow, if in the sclera of your eye there are these blobs of white or yellow, and you definitely have some sort of blockage in the cystic duct or the common bile duct, stones in the gallbladder, whatever it might be that brings you to the doctor, to the hospital, etc., etc., the day they cut your gallbladder out, if it's unnecessary, is a bad day for you. Because, I ask you, and they will tell you, to cut this organ out is just a simple snip. It's a laparoscopic surgery. It doesn't take that long. You're as good as new, and you don't need that organ anyway. Check the statistics. How many gallbladders were cutting out each year? Unbelievable. How many thyroids were cutting out each year? Unbelievable. And this one with the gallbladder is really, really, really a tragedy. Because once the gallbladder's out, first of all, before the gallbladder gets stuck with sludge or stones or calcified stones, before that happens, the bile veins way up in the liver are shut. That's never taken care of. But secondarily, once that gallbladder's out, the rate, the speed at which you're going to clean your blood slows down even more. So first we had blockages in the bile veins deep in the liver that extended into the gallbladder that actually created then the buildup of the stone. And we take the gallbladder out. What about the bile veins in the liver? So we've already reduced the rate at which we clear the blood. Then we cut out the gallbladder. Now we really leave those poisons in the blood. So we're exacerbating the problem. Secondarily, and this you take to your surgeons, and this you take to your medical doctors, and you can tell them, I said so, because hard science will get behind the statement. Once the gallbladder is cut out, the pressures up inside the bile veins will increase. The intrabiliary pressures will increase. In other words, the bile is produced in the liver, which is a huge organ in the upper right quadrant. The bile comes down through those ducts at a pressure. Water through a hose has a pressure. Blood through your artery has a pressure. Bile through the bile canaliculi, the bile passageways, has an intrabiliary pressure. When you take the reservoir out, which is the gallbladder, the pressure inside the bile duct goes way up. And it starts to hemorrhage the bile duct. So you start to spill filthy, toxic bile into your liver itself. The liver cells now are drenched in dirty, acidic, toxic bile. And what the body does to that is it infiltrates the liver with fat. You build a fatty liver secondary to toxicity from hemorrhaging within the bile duct. I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. This is Straight Talk on Health. If you're new to the show, welcome. It's another level of understanding, one I hope you're ready for. Again, get to the website, straighttalk.cc. That's straighttalk.cc. Get to the archive shows so you can listen again. But once you get it with me, you get it for good, and you can activate it into your existence. So don't get the gallbladder cut out for both those reasons. And what's the solution for that? You know, this is where herbs are fantastic. We have herbs like coin grass. We have herbs like bitter orange. We have herbs like turmeric. We have all sorts of herbal remedies to dissolve fatty stones, not calcified ones. Calcified stones, if they have a calcified shell, there's a South American herb called stonebreak. And that's the only one I know that will make the claim that it can decalcify the shell or for calcified stone. But the whole array of little olive oil flushes to coffee enemas to the big olive oil flushers. Check The Great Gallbladder Flush out, a book by a guy named Moritz, M-O-R-I-T-C, I-T-Z. The Great Gallbladder Flush. Fantastic. Full-sized book on all the variations of the gallbladder with every question and answer. Then there's Ed Wilson's book, Are You Stoned? Another fantastic expose on the gallbladder and saving the gallbladder through the flushes. And you guys already know Premier Research Labs makes the best herbs. So their coin grass, their milk thistle, their turmeric, their bitter orange in Billevin, and so on and so forth. Wonderful array of high quality herbs so that you can start to finesse these flushes. Now, your doctors are going to tell you what happens. They're going to say to you, the stone will get stuck. And if it gets stuck in the duct, the cystic duct that goes from the gallbladder to the common bile duct, you're going to have a problem. And then the doctor will say, if the stone gets stuck in the common bile duct, meaning that passage just as it drops into the intestine, you're going to have a problem. And what you have to understand is a couple of things. When you get the radiology report, when the scan or the ultrasound comes back, you have to make sure that your radiologist measures the size of the stones. They have to measure the size of the stones. They have to tell you, are the stones calcific? Then they have to tell you the diameter of the cystic duct. Then they have to tell you the diameter of the common bile duct. And if they give you the measurements, then you know what you're left with? If you've got a stone calcified in the gallbladder that's 1 centimeter, guess what? It's not going anywhere. It can't get stuck. It's too big to get out of the gallbladder. And if it's under 4 millimeters, the bile ducts will handle it. Because you're going to use magnesium to dilate the ducts. You're going to use bitter orange to dilate the ducts. You're going to have the ducts under intense peristaltic activity. You're going to push that stone through because it's small enough. And if those stones are between 4 and 7 millimeters, well, you want to know that. Because then, yes, rarely does this happen. The stone can get caught in the duct. And then you're back to where you started from. You're back to needing to have the gallbladder taken out. I've seen this in 20 years once. Cost benefit. It is infinitely worth the risk of trying under supervision in an intelligent way, in a researched way, in a studied way, the thousands of ways to clean that gallbladder out, from coffee enemas to gradated levels of ingestion of olive oil. But it is so much on the side of benefit than it is to cost. Because the incidence of, oh, the stone got caught in the duct and we had to take the gallbladder out anyway, which is where you started in the beginning, is so, so rare. When your doctor tells you the stones will back up the pancreas, inflame it, and we're going to go into pancreatitis, he's talking about 9 times out of 10 alcoholic pancreatitis. Situations where people are not taking care of a plugged gallbladder because they're either alcoholic or they're from wherever and can't tend to their health in any way, shape, or form. They're citing instances that they've seen, and they have seen them, that are always about people who aren't taking care of themselves and haven't taken care of themselves for many years and aren't heeding the warnings and the body signals and the rest of it. So you're not getting reality in this case in the hospital from your gastroenterologist, from your liver specialist when they tell you, just snip it out and you don't have an option. Don't drink the Kool-Aid. Number one, Graves' disease. Don't cut out the thyroid unless it's necessary. Number two, the gallbladder. Don't cut out the gallbladder unless it's necessary. Is it ever necessary to cut out the thyroid? Yes. Life-threatening cancer. Is it ever necessary to cut out the gallbladder? If you've got septic cholecystitis, in other words, if your gallbladder's infected to the point where it may burst, if they're telling you not to do it now, could be life-threatening, listen to them. There is always an appropriate use for surgery. There just is. And it's tragic, and it's tough luck, and it's the rest of it, but sometimes you've got to cut it out. It just goes that way. You're at grave risk, especially if you're not under supervision. If your gallbladder is septic, because if the thing bursts and you go into septicemia and you're on vacation somewhere, you can die. You can get hurt. So, of course, in rare instances, you're going to have risk. You've got to know that risk. And if your qualified physicians, your doctors tell you you're at risk, listen to them. Don't be dogmatic or extreme against the interest of common sense. And this is a general theme in the show. Use your common sense, but understand that the correct use of alternative medicine, of herbs, is going to demand your education. Let's keep going. Number three, knee replacement. There's a faux pas, knee replacement. For everybody, no. There are some people literally experience the bone-on-bone, agonizing pain of the distal end of the femur touching and grinding into the plateau of the tibia, meaning the thigh bone is crushing into the leg bone. And yes, sometimes you just got to get it done. Lots and lots and lots and lots of times you don't need to get it done. And lots of times you're getting it done 10 to 20 years too soon. But let me explain how we've evolved here now with these knee replacements and what the problem is and what you can do about them. Number one, if you're 60 years old and your orthopedic surgeon looks at the knee, you know what he's thinking? He doesn't tell you this, but he's thinking, look, this guy's 60 or this woman's 60. By the time they're 70, from what I can see, this knee's going to be a mess. They're already in pain. They've failed physical therapy. Let's take it out now while they're younger, because there's always issues. When you put titanium into the flesh of the body, there's always issues and there's always risk. So let's get them now before they're heavily diabetic, say, before they're 70 instead of 60 and they've got five more diseases on top of this one. They're on five more pharmaceutical drugs on top of this one. So, Mr. Smith, let me do you a favor as your physician. Let's replace your knee at 60 rather than 70 or 70 rather than 80 when we have to worry about your heart and anesthesia and so on and so forth. So you've got to understand. When you have knee pain and you failed physical therapy, and I got to tell you right now, no knock to physical therapy, but they are the last people you should be seeing to rehab chronic knee problems. To rehab your knee after an accident, to rehab your knee after a surgery, they're fantastic. I would never take it away. But to rehab your knee when you've had knee pain for 5 years and you can't figure it out and you're kind of lost, so you go to the orthopedic guy and the orthopedic guy says, well, look, before we replace your knee, Mr. Smith, we'll try surgery. To send you to a physical therapist at that point is 99% useless. So you got to understand what happens now. You walk in like that at 60, 65 years old. Some of you are even younger than that. And they tell you, look, the knee's worn down. They're thinking, I ought to do this now and save this guy the pain because he's going to be in pain anyway. And so he shows you the MRI or the scan, the X-ray, and he says, you see, it's bone on bone. And you believe that because you don't know any better. The truth is the cartilage pads, the medial and lateral menisci, have thinned out. And yes, there is decreased joint space. And so it looks like it's bone on bone when it's not. There is a huge difference, and here's my point. There is a huge difference between bone on bone and decreased joint space. And that difference makes all the world. Let me tell you why. Principle. concept. Again, get to the website, straighttalk.cc, so you can get into these subjects where I discuss biomechanics. I discuss it with exercise. I discuss biomechanics with head and neck trauma. Different shows on the site relate to this concept. When your cartilage, your articular cartilage, is worn down, what has been wearing it down over a period of years is loss of alignment. The gravity lines from your head to your feet have been pushed off the right angles. So you're pressing your weight into parts of the cartilage that weren't supposed to take that much compressive force. That is why they're wearing down. It's simple. Your alignment's off. Even more simple than that is your experience of the fact that you're not on your heels anymore, you're on your toes. I'll exaggerate that. The difference between the way you feel when your feet are in the earth and you take your shoes off and what happens when you put your shoes on, men, when you go to work, or when you put your sneakers on and you just walk around the house, or ladies, worse yet, with these ridiculous high heels. And I always have to remind you humorously that if you're out there wearing 9-inch heels to the Friday night gala, you look ridiculous. I'm sorry. I have to say that. I don't understand that. Somebody get onto the show and comment why you do that. Why would you take your wonderful God-given body and try to add 9-inch wood platform heels? I mean, come on. You have to understand what high heels do, putting big, strong peasants' feet into these little mangy heels or these wooden clogs, what that does to the alignment, the way the force lines of gravity drive down the femur and into the ankle. Along the way, they will send abnormal vectors of force into the articular cartilage of the knee and destroy it. You will grind it to dust. And that's what many people do in the day-to-day. They lose their alignment. Now, getting your alignment back, that's its own art form. That's what flexibility training, that's what Pilates, that's what massage, rolfing, that's what anybody that understands structural work should give you back. But in the short form now, I just want you to relate to what it's like, ladies, men, when you go out and you put on all the jewelry, the watches, the necklaces, the different forms of shoes, the tie, the belts that are too tight. You go out, you spend the day pounding the hoofs on concrete, and then you come home at night, you take off your clothes, and you just walk with your feet in the earth. Or maybe you go into the backyard, and you just walk, and you let your feet hit the earth. The way you feel in your feet, you will say, I feel like all my life is back. All my energy is back. Whatever you say in that moment, here's my point and my message to you. In that moment, you're realigning. In that moment, you are realigning. That's not the way you feel each day as you walk up and down the stairs. That's not the way you feel out there on the pavement in a hot summer day. That's not the way you even feel when you're playing sports. More than three quarters, 90% of the time, you're off balance when you're in athletic activity. And the compressive force into the joint when you're off balance is grinding up your knee. Wow. All the unnecessary knee surgeries I see each year, the ones that are done 10 years ahead of time in the name of good care, that could simply be avoided by realigning the joint. If we just understood what that meant, which we don't generally, we don't. Your chiropractors miss this point. Many of your massage therapists miss this point. What it is to get back your alignment, your center, is ahead of the curve. That's why you listen to this show, to be ahead of the curve. The profit in teaching you how to bring your body to center is minimal. It is not a high profit item. It is a fundamental driver of human health. That Ida Rolf, the progenitor of this, Rolf, as in rolfing, spent a good 30 years running around the world in a suitcase trying to get people to understand what it really means to feel. I didn't say nod intellectually or academically. I said to feel the shift in your alignment is what you don't understand. So I am planting the seed on this day and giving you that I get home from work and take off my shoes analogy. Build on that and then take it to the next level. You have to get flexible. Lots of what we call joint pain in the knee, they don't tell you this, is related to the fact that you are not 50 to 75% more flexible at all angles around the joint, the knee in this case. No, that doesn't mean you're going to receive dramatic changes in your level of pain with a couple of weeks of stretching. It doesn't mean that's going to happen. It means when you can say or show to yourself or under supervision, you're 50 to 60% more flexible in your hamstrings, in your adductors, behind the knee, in the belly of your gastrocnemius, your calf muscle, in your Achilles tendon, and your weight is shifted through the flexibility training, then you will have very often, a high percentage of the time, dramatic improvement in the pain of the knee. But not until then. So again, don't misunderstand. When somebody says, shift your alignment, get flexible, this is something you have to sustain with a moderate to more advanced level of release. You have to get at least 50% more flexible. You have to shift your alignment and keep it shifted 3/4 of your day. These things are possible. These things are really the benchmark of correct physical therapy. These things are what physical therapists should be learning. These things are what chiropractors should be learning. These things are what massage therapists should be learning. And you think MSM is going to fix your joint pain and prevent your knee surgery. You think some sulfur-based pharmaceutical or from sulfur-based nutritional product like chondroitin or glucosamine is going to fix. And I hope it does. And again, it's this concept now of try the local remedy for the nutritional problem. Hope that MSM into your knee joint is going to make you feel better. Hope that white willow bark as an anti-inflammatory or cat's claw as an anti-inflammatory is going to help that joint. Hope that something like glucosamine or chondroitin sulfate are going to help. I've used them all in mega doses. Put people in free trials and stuffed every herb imaginable down their throat for weeks at end. And very often I see no change. And sometimes I do. So try it. But if you don't get it, again, it's that concept, the deeper understanding. If you replace the joint, you can no longer flex beyond 90 degrees your knee. So when you're sitting now in the chair, your knees are at right angle to the floor. That's as much as you'll ever bend the knee after a full knee replacement. The repercussion of that loss of range of motion into the knee, is catastrophic. Because once you lose that flexibility in the knee, you lose the flexibility in the thigh, which means your psoas muscle becomes incompetent. Get into any of my shows on exercise, and we'll be talking about the psoas muscle and its tremendous significance as it relates to the health of all your organ systems, to the you that you call the vibrant you. You don't have one that works after that knee replacement. That is the catastrophe. Titanium between your hip and your foot is the ultimate disaster. If you have to get the knee replacement, ask for the partial. Here's a scenario. A guy's 300 pounds. He's 100, 250 pounds overweight. And they're going to do a full knee replacement because they know at 300 pounds he's going to break through a partial. So instead of saying, look, at risk of health, drop the 150 pounds, and then we do a partial. Because at your weight, if we add now a full knee replacement, the repercussions on top of the weight are going to be catastrophic. You see, no, what we do is we give him a full knee replacement. We don't tell him any of this. And then a few years later, when he's dead of some other ailment that doesn't relate to the knee, we say, oh, tough luck. There's no relationship between the two. That's not intelligent. It's obvious to me, ladies and gentlemen, that I'm not going to get to the top 10 surgeries. Because I'm on number 3, and the time goes so fast. Let's try. Let's talk about the facelift. I may have to get to the rest next week, but we're doing wonderfully. the facelift, and the hair replacement. I'm going to put both of them together. I hate to tell you this, ladies. The facelift is a potential life-threatener. And it's because of the scars. The cut under the chin, up behind the ears, around to the back of the head. It's taking the connective tissue underneath the skin, underneath that skin of the scalp, and pulling it like twisting a sweater. And once you do that, the central intelligence mediated through the fascia, the connective tissue, emanating from the hypothalamus and the pituitary into the rest of your glands is gone. It's under extreme duress. It's life-threatening. You can't have health if the neuroendocrine system is backwards, is diplopic. It's cross-eyed all of a sudden. If you've given it late-stage dyslexia, if it doesn't know left from right because you've twisted it upside down by twisting the fascia underneath your precious skin. But this is so sensitive an issue. I think I could put together a group of females that would say, I'd rather be dead than not get that facelift. And I'm not going to knock that. I'm going to take a very conservative approach here. I'm not going to take a conservative approach in a moment when we talk about breast augmentation. That one, I'm sorry, I'm going to put that in the group of 10-inch platform shoes. But the facelift, I'm going to be conservative here. If you get one, you must remediate the scar. You must fix those scars. But that just doesn't mean putting clay on. That's not good enough. I assure you, it's not good enough. You have to remediate those scars. Using clay, definitely. Using the med body packs, the magma packs, very important to do. Essential. But you have to put your experience of energy back into the process. And if you've never had the experience of energy via a massage or a stretch class, you're going to have to go get it. Because if you've never had it, then how would you know what you're missing? And this is all going to sound like gobbledygook to you. And that's the tragedy in and of itself. We're going to say that the body's an energy field. We're going to say that the scars will block the energy. And yet you, the consumer, the ardent, innocent public, don't even understand or have an experience of energy in your flesh. That is bad. And that is costly. Because you never really know then if you've remediated the scar. You have to fix these things in your own experience. You have to reference the cure to your own experience. So that if you were to get a facelift, or if you have one already, and someone were to take these magma clays and rub them through your scars, and you were to feel circulation into those areas, fantastic. But if someone were to put their hands on the scar, if someone were to pull your ears, if someone were to dig into your neck, if you were to be taught to stretch out the upper cervical spine, if when you did that you realigned, if you did that and your breath started to become more deep, if you did that and you started to feel a deep, warm circulation of blood and nerve flow into those areas that you didn't have before, that you have now post-therapy, light the cigar. Bullseye. Bingo! Because that's exactly what has to happen. Until then, you haven't remediated anything. Until that, you haven't shifted your cranial flow. Get to the website if you don't know what that is. Until then, you haven't hit critical mass in the process. See, critical mass, I use this term all the time in my shows. Get to critical mass when you stretch. That means shift your alignment. Get to critical mass when you do gallbladder flushes. That means get the bile. Get to critical mass when you do a physical therapy into a tissue in the name of turning on a scar. That means you feel a deep circulation. Deep and deeper than that, into the bone, even into the brain. I've done this to people, pull their ears, and watch their heads flop back and forth on the table for an hour like a helicopter. Unwinding. Yes, we call it unwinding. Unwinding all the fascial torque in the body. I see these things regularly. If the physical therapy is applied correctly. Applied correctly to critical mass. It means your massage therapist, your chiropractor should understand the gradients, the landmarks, the reference points of cure and more advanced cure and more advanced cure. And if they don't get to second base, they get nowhere. Are you getting it? You can get this. What lots of people do, your friends, thank you for all the referrals to this show. What your friends tend to do is say, oh, I just want to know what herb to take. Well, bless them and hope that that herb will fix this kind of stuff. But not from what I've seen in the hospitals each day to the doctor's office in chronic states of sustained illness. Does a simple one-shot stop work, whether it's pharmaceutical or herbal? So you just got to dig your heels in. And isn't it fascinating anyway? Doesn't this fascinate you? If it fascinates you, you're in the right place. If it bores you, you're just not there in the evolutionary line yet. Think about that. I wanted to get to hysterectomies and uterectomies. Maybe we'll do this next week. Hair replacements. Double what I just said for facelifts with the hair replacements. I am very suspicious of these things as it relates to seizures. Keeping metal in the arm, the leg, the head, the face of surgeries. Breast augmentation. I spared you this. We may have to pick that up next week. And next week I'm going to go after bypass surgeries because lots of times we don't need them. I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. This is Straight Talk on Health. It's been a pleasure. For the school, call Annika. I want you to call Annika. I've got five spaces left for next Sunday, 310-559-0811. 310-559-0811. Call Annika. Come see me next Sunday, September 9th from 12 to 6 p.m. See you next week. Ciao.
You've been listening to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Invite your family and friends to the show and learn about Dr. Medici through his website, straighttalk.cc. He'll give you the tools you need to save your health and prevent unnecessary surgeries and harmful drugs. And the best part? You can call in live with your health questions every week. For those of you still holding for Dr. Medici, stay on hold. He'll continue to answer calls for as long as it takes. He's dedicated to your ultimate healing. And remember, to contact his office for an appointment, call Rachel or Johanna at 310-320-1132. That's 310-320-1132. Join Dr. Medici next week at 10 a.m. for more Straight Talk on Health. This show and the information therein has not been evaluated by the FDA, and recommended products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. The information provided on this site is for informational purposes only and is not intended as a substitute for advice from your physician or other healthcare professional.